This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 106.
So the outside principle is just a fancy way of saying learn by doing, experiential learning. And the reason for it is, again, faced with transitions. Do I want to go for that role? Am I more of a technical expert or do I want to move into management? People tend to try to figure it out introspectively, and you can't because there's nothing in your past history that actually is informative and you don't know. And sometimes we fool ourselves, or what we imagine something is not what it is. All you can do is experiment with it, try to approximate it, try to do it in small ways to try it out. In the process of doing that, learn more about what it is and whether you think you'd like to be doing that kind of work.
Why should you act like a leader to become a leader? What role does our identity play in our career transitions and personal growth? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Hey everyone, we are about 1 month away from Elevate by Future of HR. Elevate by Future of HR is an exclusive 3-week virtual program specifically designed for next-gen HR leaders. And my goal with Elevate by Future of HR is to reimagine professional development for next-gen HR leaders like yourself. We all know that we can do more to invest in ourselves as professionals and invest in our HR teams, and this is an opportunity to do just that. Elevate is a flexible and targeted 3-week program featuring 18 interactive sessions, live Q&As for personalized guidance from 22 of the best minds in our field. In addition, you'll have on-demand access to all the recordings for all the sessions through March 31st, 2025. This is an incredible opportunity to accelerate your growth, elevate your career, and amplify your impact with actionable insights and strategies from 22 top thought leaders. So who will you be learning from at Elevate? Well, here's just a few examples. Michael Watkins will share the 6 disciplines of strategic thinking. Charlene Lee will share how AI will transform HR. Kevin Cox will talk about what defines the world-class CHRO. Humaira Malik Shahid will talk about embedding DEI into talent practices. And Mark Alfaron will tell you there are just 3 very difficult things that are the key to career success. And we also have another 17 amazing speakers at Elevate. You don't want to miss this incredible development experience, so go to Elevate by Future of HR 2024. That's Elevate by Future of HR 2024.com, and reserve your spot. And for those of you looking to make a big impact on your team's development, we also have group discounts and affordable enterprise licenses available, which will give your entire HR team the opportunity to experience Elevate. But don't wait too long to reserve your spot. Prices increase on Friday, September 13th. I'm also excited to let you know that I have recently put together a succession planning playbook that you can download for free at futureofhr.com. And whether you want to assess your current approach to succession planning or you're building your leadership development strategy from scratch, this playbook offers an actionable framework designed to help you understand what great succession planning looks like. So what are you waiting for? Go to futureofhr.com and download that succession planning playbook today. And with that, I want to introduce this week's guest, Herminia Ibarra. Herminia is the Charles Handy Professor of Organizational Behavior at the London Business School. And prior to joining LBS, she served on INSED and Harvard Business School faculties. Herminia is an authority on leadership and career development. She's on the Thinkers 50, and she ranks among the top management thinkers in the world. She's also the author of two best-selling books, Act Like a Leader, Think Like a Leader, and Working Identity. Both are incredible books that I highly recommend, and if you are considering a career transition, you must read Working Identity. She writes regularly for leading academic journals and business publications such as Harvard Business Review, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, and New York Times, and it was an honor to have her on the podcast. And in our conversation, we tried to get to both of her books, but we also talked about why identity plays a crucial role in career transitions and personal growth, why it's important to redefine your job every year to ensure you're learning, adding value, and growing as a professional, what really works when it comes to making a career transition while maintaining your current job, how to build and maintain an external network and why it matters to your career, and why leaders must focus on building a learning culture in the era of AI, and why she believes AI will reshape every aspect of HR in the coming years, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line and say hello. And now let's jump into our conversation with Herminia. Herminia, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Very well. Very happy to be here, JP. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for being on the podcast. This is such a really an interview I've been looking forward to for a long time. I'm a big fan of both of your books and all of your work and research, and so I was excited to sit down with you today. And looking at your books and research, much of it's focused on helping people transform or at least transition into a leader or a new career. So I'm curious, where does that passion for this topic come from and what led you to focus your research in these areas?
Yeah, it's true. It's all about transitions, whether you're moving up or moving out into something different. It really comes from having become fascinated with the idea of identity, how we define ourselves, who we are. It's not something that we think about on a daily basis, but when you're faced with choices, do I stay or do I go? What do I move into? Then it becomes really salient. You start asking yourself those questions. I was really interested in that and therefore started talking to people as they moved through transitions. In fact, I fell on it very much by accident. I was studying people's networks and all they talked about was who they are, who they're not, who they want to be, who they don't want to be. And so I got kind of hooked on that topic.
That's interesting. And so as you were studying people figuring out their identity, a lot of your identity became tied to defining that as well in some ways.
Yes, yes. And the irony is not lost on me. I've always been an academic. I've been in academia 34, 35 years, and that's without counting the PhD years. So I haven't changed careers, although I do study people who do.
Right. Well, I think the work you've done is just terrific. And what's different is that we're going to get into this. You're not following the same approach because what you have uncovered, I think, is not only science and research backed, but has been proven with all the research and interviews you've done. And that's what really stands out to me and why I was so happy to have you on the podcast. And so we're going to talk about both your books today. We're going to do my best. And I know it's a lot because there's a lot to cover in both of them. But I really want to focus firstly on Act Like a Leader, Think Like a Leader. And one of the key principles in this book is what you call the outside principle. Can you tell us more about this and why it's important?
Yeah. So the outside principle is just a fancy way of saying learn by doing, experiential learning. And the reason for it is, again, faced with transitions. Do I want to go for that role? Am I more of a technical expert or do I want to move into management? People tend to try to figure it out introspectively, and you can't because there's nothing in your past history that actually is informative and you don't know. And sometimes we fool ourselves or what we imagine something is not what it is. All you can do is experiment with it, try to approximate it, try to do it in small ways to try it out. In the process of doing that, learn more about what it is and whether you think you'd like to be doing that kind of work.
Yeah, and I think that learn by doing piece is so critical because a lot of us go, well, I now I'm a leader. I went from an individual contributor to a manager. I'm leading a team and I've got to think about how I'm going to behave differently. But actually, we should just behave differently. and our attitudes will probably follow.
Well, you should just behave differently. And then at some point, then reflect on it. Like what worked, what didn't work, what didn't feel so good, what felt better. Those things are better. That reflection is better afterwards when you have some new experiences to reflect on.
Well, that's really critical. So I think a lot of times from a leadership perspective, we're really thinking about what's my leadership philosophy? How do I want to be known? My reputation? It's very internally focused when actually as a leader, it's really about your followers. It's really about who you're serving, which is your team, the organization, and the job you're performing. And people forget about that. And a lot of the best leaders I know act like a leader. It's a performance, right? It's a role. It's a job they're showing up and doing. That may not be who they are when they go home on Saturday.
That's right.
Is that what you found?
Well, I didn't really study who they were when they got home on Saturday. But I don't know about a performance. Certainly, there are some aspects of the job where you have to be more conscious about how you're showing up, particularly when you are in the limelight. So certainly for those things. These things about being able to articulate what is your leadership philosophy or what is your authentic leadership, you really can't articulate any of that until you've had experience with it. And again, the way we learn is by doing things. The other thing is there's this huge knowing-doing gap. Classic thing is, you know, you're supposed to delegate, but you actually don't, especially when push comes to shove. And so there's no point really thinking about it. It's like, what's going to actually obligate me to do these things that are still not habitual, that are not in my comfort zone, but from which I can learn. And as you learn, it becomes more enjoyable. And as it becomes more enjoyable, you do more of it. And as you do more of it, it becomes who you are. Speaking, for example, I was a very shy person. I never enjoyed speaking. I couldn't even speak up in class. Because I chose academia, I was doing it all the time. And over time, I've become good at it and I've come to like it a lot and I've come to really hone that craft and select more and more situations in which I need to do it. And it's the same for becoming a leader. Nobody says, oh, I'm a leader. You start doing leadership things. Other people recognize you for it. You start thinking, oh, okay, here's what I do. And you start refining it. And eventually you say, yeah, I am a leader.
Well, I love this. And I love that you made that point because, you know, our listeners are next generation HR leaders who are hopefully up and coming in their career. And that's the important message for them to hear, is start to act like that leader, become a leader, and really get used to it. And it may not feel uncomfortable at first, but over time, you get better at it. So thank you for sharing that. You also talk about this do-it-yourself transitions, and they're becoming really the norm in our careers. What is a do-it-yourself transition?
Used to be that people only thought about this, what got you here won't get you there problem, when they got into a new role or a new company or a new job or when they got promoted. Today, sometimes promotions are fewer and further between. And the environment is changing so quickly that you can't really rest on your laurels. Just because you were doing a great job 6 months ago doesn't mean that things haven't changed or that your boss's expectations aren't any different. You've got to be looking out for the need to adapt.
Got it. So really, we're having more of these transitions that are happening inside maybe the same job you have because the context is changing.
Look at what happened in November, ChatGPT, pre and post. Everybody's job is different.
There's so much more change now.
There was nothing else that changed. Same title, same organization, everything else, but a really big difference in the environment, which means that I do things differently and so do most of the people that I know.
Yeah, we have to adapt and learn to continue to keep up with our careers. You also talk about is the first step in acting like a leader is to redefine your job. Tell us more about how do you redefine your job to act like a leader?
Yeah, well, it's about thinking about what you spend your time on. And if you're spending all your time on things that are kind of daily, routine, operational, maybe urgent, but not necessarily important, maybe just what's being dictated to you without really exercising your agency to add to it what you're interested in, then you're not growing and you're not learning and you're probably not making a strategic contribution to your organization. So how can you architect the activities that you engage in as part of your job and how you spend your time and how you prioritize it so that A, you're learning on the job, and B, you're able to elevate your contribution to something that's a bigger picture.
That's a really smart perspective. Do you feel like people should do that every 6 months on a daily basis? How often do you see people kind of redefining their job?
It's not like a daily thing, but I think people just need to be conscious of how they're spending their time and is that in alignment with their goals and their priorities, adding value for the organization. Once you have that sort of clear in your head, it's easier on a daily basis to tweak things a bit, to do more here or do less there. I mean, some of the things are quite obvious things, like, for example, try to empower the team to do more of the stuff you can do in your sleep so that then you can spend more time perhaps with external stakeholders and things like that.
Well, it's a great perspective because a lot of us sometimes forget that we actually can sculpt and change our jobs more than we think. And that's really going to your bosses and being thoughtful, right, to your point, and really kind of redefining what that role is.
Yeah, I mean, it's dangerous. It creates that kind of passivity, doesn't bode well for surviving and thriving in the next 20 years. You sculpt it, you figure out what you want to do with it, and then convince your boss.
That's great. The next and second principle is around networking. We always give advice, people should go network, but people struggle at this. Why do people hate it? What have you found around what works and what doesn't work?
People hate it because human nature is to hang out with people like us. It's safe and it's comfortable, and it's scary and dangerous to hang out with people who are not like us. You know, like from an evolutionary perspective, you could have lost your life. So it's not habitual. You've got to get out. You've got to take initiative. There isn't an immediate payoff. It feels a little uncomfortable if you're introverted, even more so. So you really have to make an effort. There's a theme in all of these things that create growth. You have to make an effort. You have to decide it's important and you have to make an effort because it's a lot easier just to sit in front of your computer and clean out your inbox than it is to go and make some calls or ask somebody for coffee or whatever it is. The point of view I have on this is that the important thing is just to start, to just do it on maybe a small level. Just to start, reach out to a couple people, have somebody introduce you or join some kind of club where you're going to have some common interests, and just to start, kind of create some positive momentum out of this.
Yeah. And I think to your point, being intentional as you start, you know, is it people you already know, or are you really trying to build a new network in a different group? Just being thoughtful about that is helpful. I also find it helpful to say, is it networking or is it just really building a relationship and just getting to know someone? And what can I maybe do for that person, right? How can I be helpful to them? And so sort of not think about me as much, but try to think about what I can do that would make that person or benefit that person. And it seems to be easier that way.
People still struggle with that. They'll see the senior person they need to get to know. They're like, well, what do I have to offer? But you'll never find out if you're not engaged in trying to build those relationships. You just have to do it. I also study how people change careers. And the minute you're trying to get another job or move into a new career, you realize how impoverished your network is because you've been neglecting it. You've not been doing anything about it, and it really limits you. So while you're at it, while it's not urgent, it's really important that you keep your contacts fresh and see building these relationships as just an important part of what you do and what makes you valuable to your company, because your network determines who you're able to connect, introductions you're able to make for people, all of those things that make you a very valuable mentor and boss. So it's not just for you.
Oh, that's a great point. Also, you learn a lot, right? So if you want your network can help you learn, figure out what other companies are doing, bring that back to your company. And so it's so valuable.
Yeah.
You also talk about we need to be more playful with ourselves, and talk about what this means in terms of leadership and how do we kind of be more playful with who we are as a leader?
So part of leadership is what you do, but another part is how you do it. And that's the whole aspect of leadership style, how you come across. Do you connect to people rationally, emotionally? Are you more directive? Are you more empowering? All these different dimensions of style. We don't think about it very much. We do it kind of naturally, and then it gets baked into our sense of who we are. in trying to stretch that repertory or do it differently, say, I try to be a bit more inspirational. And I start thinking maybe I need to tell personal stories so I can be more personal, connect to people better. That feels not me. That, you know, that feels inauthentic. Even for somebody who's not a very good listener, trying to practice active listening, let me rephrase what you said, feels disingenuous, you know, all those things. So anything that's kind of stretching out, style is a bit more personal, can make people feel inauthentic. It's not something we want to do to be inauthentic or we want to aim for. And so what I say instead is just be playful. Give yourself permission to deviate from what you always have done for the sake of learning. I'm not saying you're going to commit to be that person who you're not, but play around. Don't just always do the same thing because you'll always get the same result. That's the idea of playful. You're not committed to it. You're just playing around to see what you might learn.
Well, the key theme is just, is to your point, try that behavior out, experiment. So if you are someone trying to be more inspirational, to your point and your example, how did that feel afterwards? What was the reaction of the team? Doesn't mean you always have to do that.
Exactly. You'll just learn more. You'll get more information by doing something different than by doing what you've always done.
But if we don't do that, we'll never change our style. We'll never adapt, right? If we don't continue to try to do different things and be more playful with who we are as leaders.
Yeah.
That's super helpful. And recently, we just talked about AI. I think everyone's talking about AI and you've been thinking a lot about what leadership looks like in the age of AI. Can you tell us more about how you see AI impacting leadership and your thoughts on this?
My take on it is not so much humans do emotion and empathy and robots do logic and analysis. You know, lots of people have made that argument. My point is more the age of AI is going to create a lot of disruption and a lot of need for change and adaptation and learning. And so the leadership skill that's going to be at a premium in the age of AI are, it's a set of skills that promote learning in organizations. And they include your ability to network broadly and externally so that you can understand what's going on outside, which is always where new ideas come from. But it also includes your ability to empower teams so that they have psychological safety and can collaborate. It includes being able to use a coaching skill set, a coaching leadership style in which you're more in asking and inquiry mode rather than in advocacy mode. It includes your ability to connect to people in the human way. It certainly includes in spades your ability to shape a culture so that it is more of a learning culture, that you're not stuck in all of the old and outdated ways of doing things, being able to see and change some of those things. So for me, leadership in the age of AI is much more about creating adaptiveness in a learning organization.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And really here, the theme of empowerment as well. So adaptability is really critical. Thanks for sharing that piece. Let's talk about Working Identity, which is your latest book, Unconventional Strategies for Reinventing Your Career. And you say that a successful transition is less about knowing one's true self, but rather starting a multi-step process to envision our possible future selves.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Talk about testing our possible future selves inside a career transition.
Working Identity is about making career significant changes. One of the big things that I learned in doing that book, but still today in every conversation that I have about career change, is that people are much more apt to know what they don't want to do or what they don't want to do any longer. And they're less clear about what they would like to do instead. And oftentimes that gets them stuck because they've been taught not to do anything until they know clearly where they're going, which you can't until you've been out there and trying it out. What I learned was that a successful process of career change takes long and it takes exploratory behavior. And rather than starting by asking yourself, where do I want to be in 5 years or who do I want to be in 5 years? You start by saying, what are 10, 15, 20 interesting possibilities that I might want to explore? And what are some of the images in my head about who I might become, even if they're unrealistic, even if you don't really want to do it, but kind of like, what's the whole set of them? And once you've freed yourself from there's only one path, then you could explore a few of them, or you could take them sequentially, or, you know, there's lots of different things you can do it helps you get to action more quickly, because in the same way as you have to act like a leader to think like a leader, you've got to try out different possibilities before you develop clarity about what you want next for your next career.
Yeah, so really around design kind of experiments, trying things out. I like the first point that I think is really clear is saying, what are these possible future selves? Because a lot of times we get pigeonholed into what we can do based on what we've done in the past. And we, of course, the way we select people is really set up the same way. If you've been in one industry, one type of job role, we're not going to all of a sudden say, well, now you can go into a different industry or a completely different function. It doesn't happen very often without steps in between. And so what you're saying is think about everything you want to do and then start to explore and take those steps, experiment along that way and that path. How have you seen people do that when they have a job? So maybe let's say you are maybe working in HR, you want to move to finance or marketing. How do you suggest people take those steps to think about making that kind of transition?
You start small. I was just interviewing somebody yesterday who said, I've got a method. He said, I just start the smallest way possible and the cheapest way possible, kind of an entrepreneur mentality. He says, I'll read a book on the topic. And if I'm still interested, then maybe I'll sign up for a cheap online course, something asynchronous, and then I start to learn. And maybe there's some kind of cohort of people attached to it, so I start talking to them about it. And then like over time, I decide if I want to hike up my investment of time and money. That's one way. Another way it is to take a course. Another way is to see what you can volunteer for. Another way is to see if you can do HR in that finance department and start getting to know people and seeing what could be several steps through. And do I like it? Volunteering, professional associations, there's anything that gets you talking to people in an area of potential interest is a good way to start.
Yeah, and I think about networking as well, so critical in this situation.
Really
probably even more critical in a lot of ways.
Yeah, even more so because we get jobs through personal contacts.
Yeah. And what else did you see from the networking piece? Were people more likely to take that phone call or get that coffee if someone said, hey, I'd love to learn more about what you do. I'm really interested in that. I think I'm making a transition. Is that an easier entry or from what you've heard in the research?
Some people accept and some people don't. I think the easier reach out is friends of friends, through alumni associations, people you used to work with. So the more connection there is, the easier it is. But I've talked to lots of people who have cold contacted people on LinkedIn, and people, some people don't, but other people accept and they're very happy to take that coffee. Just ask small for starters when you don't know somebody.
What other key points would you make for someone who's in that career or working transition? Think about what their working identity could be. What else do you find really matters?
It's really that external perspective, because actually two different things. You need an external perspective. You need to be able to talk to people who've done it, who have moved into something different, because there's an aspect of what would it be and how do I learn more about that content area? But there's also an aspect of what's going to inspire me and make me feel like this is possible and doable and other people like me have done it successfully. So you need both those aspects. The other thing is, it's a process of being creative with your self-concept and creative with regard to imagining your future. And when we're flat out, 24/7, burned out, going full speed, kids and this at home, it's really hard. It's really hard. Just being able to carve out a little time for yourself sometimes is a good starting space, a short vacation or blocking out a time a week that's just for you to maybe kind of read or play on websites or whatever, or even just exercise. But you can't handle this when you're flat out.
I think it makes sense. You need some mental space to really think about this and experiment. Great point. And Herminia, at the end of the book, you kind of said this $1 million question. You said, well, did anyone regret the move to a new career? And I'm curious, the people that you did study, were they better off? Did they regret it? What did you learn after these career transitions took place?
What I do say in the book is, who knows, because career success is subjective, right? So some people are happier and making less. Some people were happier and making more. You know, there's lots of different dimensions, and it is It is subjective. But what I do say is people don't change careers unless they have to in some way, shape, or form. And what I mean by that is in some cases, you've lost your job and you have to. But in other cases, you know you can't bear to do it anymore. The psychological toll is high. You're burning out, or you don't see your kids, and you know that you got to get out. For the people that I studied, in some way, shape, or form, all those things were true. Now, there is an exception. There is an exception. And this is the easiest way to change career, but you can't force it. And that is when you're working your day job, but you've got this incredible hobby, passion, interest that over time grows bigger and bigger, and you're doing it on your spare time. And then you realize it could be your next career, and you financially plan, and at some point you're able to move into that. Yesterday, I interviewed somebody who was in the tech world, an engineer working for one of the big tech firms, and late 40s, had all her life, was really interested in applying her math and engineering skills to making jewelry, and has finally taken a time to really explore whether this can work and whether she can create her own brand and do that. She's been doing it forever and planning it for quite some time. That is, in quotations, I say the easiest path, but it's not easy in that for those people, that interest is something that they've been making time for and cultivating within the context of a busy life. But that's the organic path.
And those are the stories we see on Entrepreneur Magazine and Fortune.
Yeah, it's not always like that. It's not always like that. I would say for most people, it is, I got to get out of this. I got to find something else. Otherwise, I'm going to go nuts. It's going to kill me.
That's a great point. Herminia, last question for you. We ask all our guests this question. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
AI. AI, it's going to reshape everything. It's going to reshape every HR process there is.
Awesome. Herminia, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your awesome research with the two books. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks so much, JP. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Herminia for her insightful conversation on working identity and how we can all act like leaders and be more like leaders each and every day. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person. And this really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with a great conversation with Tricia Alcamo, who's an accomplished CHRO and executive who's held senior HR leadership roles at FanDuel, Spectrum, and American Express. In my conversation with Tricia, we're going to go deep on her career and her perspectives on what great HR looks like and much, much more. Tricia's an inspirational leader, and you won't want to miss this opportunity to learn more about her and how she thinks about HR. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.